Hangover.
Daddy, why is Santa wearing tight leg jeans and Ray-Bans?
Because, puppy, he's a special Santa who delivers presents to Powerpuff Kids all over the world.
Daddy, who are the Powerpuff Kids, and what does Santa bring them?
Well, my sweet pea.
Ho, 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 ho!
You're listening to CITR FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, and the Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. You just heard right there from 2012, Power Pop Santa by The Pointed Sticks, released on La Ti Da Records. Today on the Nardwar Show, an interview with Terry David Mulligan. But I should give a bit of an introduction here. Terry David Mulligan interviewed me, Nardwar the Human Serviette, for his show on Roundhouse Radio. I said to the engineer at Roundhouse, could you please make me a copy? So what you're going to hear right now is the unedited version of Terry David Mulligan's conversation with me, and an allusion towards CITR. So that is a bit of an introduction of what you are going to hear right now. So it is Nardwar, the Human Serviette, versus Terry David Mulligan. And it is Terry David Mulligan versus Nardwar on CITR Radio.
Well, I'm Terry David Mulligan, and he is Nardwar, the Human Serviette. And so immediately, there are people in the audience going, what is a serviette? I don't understand. I mean, if you come from south of the border, they don't know what a serviette is. And so let me just tell them it's it's sort of like a clean version of toilet paper. No, it's what you get when you go to a diner, like say the Tomahawk, and you order the Yukon breakfast, and then they give you a little napkin. That's what it is, right?
Exactly. Who am I? Nardwar, the human serviette from CITR, FM 102, Cable 102, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And who are you?
I'm Terry David Mulligan. In this juncture, this is Roundhouse Radio, 98.3 Vancouver, Vancouver's newest FM station, our city, your voice.
And you are Terry David Mulligan.
Yes, sir, I am, with my all three names. Yes.
Thank you for having me in.
You're welcome, man. It would happen more often, except...
It took you a year.
It took you a year because exactly at this time last year, in December of last year, something happened to you, fateful.
Yes, I went to the Mint Records Christmas party, and unfortunately... I had a stroke, so I was out of action for a little while. However, I did find out that, believe it or not, I had the same stroke that Biff Naked had, that Bret Michaels had, of Poison, a PFO closure. It was caused by a hole in the heart. I had a broken heart. Terry David Mulligan, and they repaired it, and here I am today.
Was there something, looking back on it, that you knew there was something wrong with your ticker?
No, nothing. And in fact, the PFO closure, there was a hole in my heart for years. Some people, it closes. Some people, it doesn't close. And it didn't close, and it caused these problems. So it's ready to go off at any of our encounters that we have had over the years, Terry David Mulligan.
Nard, did the bacon on the Yukon breakfast, did that help?
I have cut back on that. And I am honored that my picture is on the Tomahawk Barbecue's mantelpiece.
Right in front of stool number four.
A stool. Wow, you even know, along with yours. And who else is up there in the Wall of Fame of the Tomahawk Barbecue, which is known for, of course, you mention the bacon. The bacon and eggs for the breakfast, the wiener for lunch, and the meat and cheese for the dinner, all in the Skookum Chief hamburger.
Exactly.
But who else is on the wall there?
On the left-hand side, very funny comedian, 33 and a third, acted with Elvis's wife, played a bumbling detective.
Kimberly Conrad. She's from the North Shore as well.
No.
Good friends of Jason Priestley.
Okay. Let me get this right, if I could. Let me see. This is just about your stroke at the Astoria Pub. That's correct, sir, right? The Mint Records. Did you see the report? Have you seen the posting of the report, the actual screen report? Have you seen it?
Altered level of consciousness.
Yes. Remarks. Confused mail.
Just another night at the Astoria.
I don't understand. How is that any different from what you were normally when you walked in?
Exactly. Like, people are like, what the hell is different?
By the way, Joey Keithley got a BC Hall of Fame star. Did you see that on the side?
I was there right beside.
Wow.
And right for that event.
Where'd
that was amazing.
Star? Where'd they put it?
They put it right beside a guy that was totally into Bhangra. So they acknowledged Bhangra, which is cool, before punk rock, but still, like, Bhangra and punk rock together.
But where in the city? Where on the sidewalks?
Outside the Commodore Ballroom.
Oh, wonderful. Fantastic. Now, if you were to get a star, which you will.
Do you have one, TDM?
Yes, I do.
Where's yours?
Well, initially it was in front of the Commodore Ballroom, but then they repaved, they did the sidewalk again, and I have no idea where they
Who
put
me. Who is it beside, though? Hugh Pickett?
No, it was beside Bruce Allen and Bryan Adams.
That is pretty high placing.
Yes, it was. Now, here's the thing. If you, and when you get that star, Nardwar, the human serviette, where would you like it to go if you could?
Well, I think probably on another street, probably outside of the Penthouse Cabaret.
Nice.
Which A.O. Chapman, Aaron Chapman, has written all those great books. And he has a new book all about the Clark Park Gang, but he wrote about the Penthouse Cabaret, and I've interviewed him a few times.
But they're not putting stars in front of the penthouse,
are they? Not yet, but I would love to have it there. Okay. By the time I get a star, it will be outside of the penthouse.
what kicked this in? Well, I had been asking for an interview with you for quite some time, and your people kept coming back saying, no, not now. He's recovering. He's recovering.
Well, your people being me.
You.
Yeah.
And I was thrilled when you said, yeah, let's do this. And then in conjunction with the Evaporator's new album, Ogopogo Punk, and it's out now.
It is out now. And what is really interesting is there's a connection between Ogopogo Punk and you directly. In fact, this gentleman right here on the bottom right, if you see his picture on the bottom right, his name is Nick. On the bottom right,
yep.
Nick, he is now in Evaporators. He is called Nick Thomas. And his sister is?
Danny Thomas?
Jackie Thomas, who did the cover of your book.
No.
Mulligan Stew.
Wow.
So there is a connection. Nick Thomas is in Evaporators, and his sister, Jackie Thomas, did the cover of your book, Mulligan's Stew.
He's practically part of the family.
Exactly. An amazing connection. And I must say, thank you also, Terry, for getting me the Snoop hat. Remember Snoop Dogg movie? Could you explain that? Soul Plane,
okay.
Right?
Well, here's the thing. I was doing movie television as part of my job with Much West. And I, a couple of times a week, I would go on a film set and we would lay in wait and we'd set up a couple of chairs and whoever were the stars or who we wanted to talk to, we'd wait for them and they'd come and they'd sit down. We have a great talk. Well, I was going to do the Snoop movie, and every time I go by that corner lot, I think of you and him and that day. It was in a school, if I'm not, or a community center, one of the two. And I had said to the people doing the movie, I'm going to bring someone special with me. Well, who is it? It's Nardwar, the human serviette. What? And what is he going to do? He's not going to make any trouble, is he? I said, no, he wants to talk to Snoop. So they were not convinced. They thought you were going to really rip it up and you were going to piss off their star and he'd walk off the set and stuff like that. So how did it go that day?
Amazing. From the year 2000 till now, the bromance started. You started, TDM. That was actually on the set of Bones in Vancouver, but you got me a Soul Plane autographed Snoop Doggy Dog hat. Hello, motherfucker, Nardwar, crazy motherfucker. And you got that for me signed, and you brought it back from L.A.
He said it on camera, too, didn't he?
It was, I'm not sure, but what's like an amazing promo item? It was like a Soul Plane hat signed to me by Snoop Dogg. That was amazing. I was just curious. You have quite a few signed artifacts, don't you? Like, how does that Snoop thing rate?
But here's the thing, Nard. I mean, I spent time with Jimi Hendrix in The Experience. Why didn't I get them to sign something that day?
I know you were kind of flustered that day.
Very flustered.
Yeah, but did he mention more about playing or growing up in Vancouver? Because you interviewed Hendrix, and did he mention much about Vancouver? Aside from that one little shout-out
to
Vancouver.
When he started to talk about schools that he went to, I went, what the hell? What? How does he know that? And then I realized that there was part of his life that I didn't even know about. It really bothered me, something fierce. But I tapped dance as hard as I could. I find it hard to watch the interview because I'm a better interviewer now. I would have had much more fun with it. And Noel Redding was on the end. I would love to have talked to him some more. And I could have done so much better.
However, you did go to England with the Guess Who.
Yes, I did.
In fact, they even wrote a song for you. What is that song? The Guess Who Blues, the TDM Blues.
It's something about, actually, I think the line is, TDM, I don't dig him no more. I think I had romanced his girlfriend away from him or something.
And you are Terry David Mulligan, and you are listening to Roundhouse Radio and maybe Nardwar.
And I'm Terry David Mulligan, and this is Roundhouse Radio, 98.3 in Vancouver. He is Nardwar, the human serviette, and you can find him
on CITR in Vancouver.
Thank you, man. Now, here's the thing. I saw this. This it was in the newspaper today, the actual. Do you read a newspaper anymore?
I do indeed.
Okay. It says, punk collection ablaze on the Thames. Don't get nostalgic about punk music, and if you do, Don't go collecting memorabilia from the glory days of the Sex Pistols. That seemed to be the message Saturday when the son of Sex Pistols manager Malcolm McLaren and fashion designer Vivian Westwood set fire to an extensive collection of punk memorabilia on a boat in central London. Joe Corey claimed his collection of clothes, posters, and other music-related items was worth £5 million. That's, Corey told the crowd watching his self-styled protest on the river, punk was never, ever, ever meant to be nostalgic. What do you think about that, Nard?
It's driving up prices. I am, like, so angry. Yes, I am a collector scum. So the son of Vivian Westwood and Malcolm McLaren, did you interview any of them?
No.
I did know that you did interview Joe Strummer.
I did.
Who was really into the punk scene. He came to your house, right?
He came to my house, and I had my back was out, and my dad was there with me, and he sang Christmas songs beside the Christmas tree. He did three tunes for the camera, and he walked out, and my dad said, "What is that? I have no idea. What just happened?" I said, "Well, we were just doing a Christmas special." Joe Strummer, great guy.
Free the files. Where is that footage?
I don't know, man.
Free the files.
They're all back east.
You don't keep any records of anything you do,
no,
do
but
Terry?
I said everything was sent to the CBC in Toronto, and everything was sent to the Much Music in Toronto. It's all back there somewhere.
Free the files. Like, you had Joe Strummer at your house, but I guess kind of like the ground zero of punk is Malcolm McLaren and Vivian Westwood and their son burnt all this memorabilia.
It would drive you crazy.
On attempts. And it drove prices right up. What, I could not believe it.
What have you got for Sex Pistols stuff?
I only have, well, actually, I do have a Sex Pistols 8-track, which is pretty amazing,
cool.
Which I paid $25 for. But still, the Sex Pistols on 8-track, that is kind of weird to have, like, the Sex Pistols on 8-track. They were still making 8-tracks to that day.
And you have an 8-track player?
I don't. I'm like a total collector scum, so I keep it all sealed. And I look to my right, or actually, I look to my left, and I look to your right, and you still have, you are kind of a collector scum, because you have the first Nardwar record. I am honored. Could you explain? I have. Oh,
what,
God,
what
my
I
mom.
What I have is Nardwar, the Human Serviette Presents. What year was this?
1989. Okay. Oh, God, my mom's on Channel 10, and you still have it, Terry.
The Vindicators, the Gruesomes, the Mighty Squirrels. It was the 150s?
The LA 150s, named after a scooter. I am surprised that you haven't sold that off. Like, thank you so much for keeping that.
Oh, excellent. I got a Rash, the Evaporators.
You have,
still bound.
It's, wow. Total collector scum action.
I have Liberace Unplugged.
That is amazing. The Canadian Liberace is. Who would you say the Canadian Liberace is? The Canadian Liberace is.
Well, it's not David Foster, because he's much better than that. I don't know. Who would that be?
I'm not sure. I was just curious. What is the closest you got to Liberace?
Never.
Little Richard. Way back when?
Little Richard.
What was he like way back when?
Oh, he was crazy. But you know what? If you went with the crazy, and you talk to him like he was a crazy person. No, that's not true. If you just went with him and tried not to do a normal interview, just a conversation, he was much better. It wasn't very good.
Did he have lots of handlers?
Yeah.
Who is the most security that you've encountered? Like, for instance, when I interviewed James Brown, they had Snowman, who worked security on Michael Jackson's Off the Wall. And they said, if I asked the wrong question, Chris Nelson was behind the camera, I would get punched by security. Like, in other words, there was a lot of security. What was the most security around you at any time for anything? Well, did Little Richard have security?
No, it was The Last Waltz.
Really?
Yeah.
In what sense was the security?
Well, you couldn't move. I mean, it was a great night, but they had security everywhere. Because they were guarding, you know, Scorsese's cameras, his camera guys, the band. Dylan was back there. The history of rock and roll was backstage. And that, well, I'd never seen bigger security. That and Woodstock. But in terms of one person, it's got to be somebody like Liza Minnelli or something.
Were you at the Michael Jackson gig in Vancouver?
I wasn't.
Did you get a chance ever to speak to him?
No.
Did you ever get a chance to speak to Bobby Taylor from Vancouver, who produced the first Jackson 5 LP?
Cheech and Chong. I got a...
You got a tour from Cheech and Chong.
That's right.
Free Defiles.
Yeah,
like
right.
Cheech and Chong talking about Hendrix and the Smiling Buddha.
I'd kill to see that one.
Free it does exist somewhere, right?
Yeah. I have a new... I have a gift for you. Learn Disco Dancing.
Oh, that is amazing.
Yeah.
This is Learn Disco Dancing. It's fun. It's easy. Great for parties. And a great picture. I love these instructional records, especially because we may play this on CITR Radio, and we can play and we can subject the listeners to the American Hustle. Did you once get spat on by a Mohican punk?
Yes, I would. I did. Actually, what I was saying to the camera was, I was talking about John Lennon. It was one of the anniversaries of John Lennon's death, and I was really zoned in on what I wanted to say to the camera, and he gobbled on my leg. I finished the comment and then went running after him. If I'd gotten my hands on him, I think I'd been charged with something and every once in a while, I see him. I still see him on the streets of Vancouver, and I'm always in a car, and he's always walking. One of these days, I'm going to be on the street with him.
Is he still a punk, though?
No, he's sort of... No.
So he sold out, and here you are. You are not afraid to play Mohawks and Dreadlocks by the Evaporators on Roundhouse Radio.
98.3 Vancouver.
Cold winters too. Ha! Yeah, we travel like road runners. Oh, but that's the life we choose. And every time we get feeling low down, we always got the guess who blues. Now listen, they came to see us, and so did TDM. Don't dig him no more. Whoa, they all dug our music. Yeah, and we played it just for them. And when we all got feeling low down, we always had the guess who blues. I gotta tell you about it one time, hey! Not the most. Yeah, so we grooved in Daryl's Grooveyard, way out on the western coast. And every time we had a bad times, we always had to guess who. Yeah, everything was signed for a BP, and the soup was so good.
He is Nardwar, the Human Serviette. I'm Terry David Mulligan. We're doing two shows here. We're doing mine, which is live from Real Town Roundhouse Radio. Well, it's not mine. It's Corey's show, and he allows me to come in and do it. And then your show.
Thank you so much for allowing me to do this on CITR Radio.
By the way, how is the station?
Amazing. We are in a new location, the CITR, the student nest. I'm like saying the CITR nest because you walk into the student union building and there is CITR right there, right in the open, right beside the deli. It is amazing. It looks kind of like, a dentist's office, etc. But still, it's like totally professional. It's amazing.
Like a, it's like a radio station.
It's like a new beginning.
There you go. It's streamed.
Exactly, at www.citr.ca, or you can get the Nardwuar podcast on iTunes, and you could be listening to it right now.
The album is called Ogopogo Punk. Now, Ogopogo, for some people who are maybe new to Canada or new to the West Coast, Ogopogo is legendary. Up in the Okanagan, but I'm sure that fame has spread far and wide across this great vast nation of ours from sea to shining sea.
It's kind of like Canada's Loch Ness Monster. I think you lived up there.
I did.
And speaking of Vancouver Island, where you live right now, there's Cadborosaurus as well. So we could say Cadborosaurus, but we say Ogopogo Punk. And Cadborosaurus in Cadboro Bay is kind of like the Ogopogo.
No, it's not.
That's what they say. It's a monster.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Nard.
Well, I'm downplaying the Ogopogo bit, but still, Cadborosaurus is very important. But yeah, the album is called Ogopogo Punk. And I was inspired because a long time ago, Leonard Nimoy, did you ever talk to him?
Here's my Leonard Nimoy story. It was one of the Star Trek films, and I was doing the junket in Los Angeles. There were 50 or 60 of us, one at a time, to go in and talk to him. He answered three questions. In the first interview, and two in the second, one in the third interview, and went home. He said, I'm going to go get a coffee. He went to get a coffee and never came back because he didn't want to talk about pointy ears. He didn't want to talk about Spock. He didn't want to talk about any of that stuff. He didn't want to talk about his characters or answer the same questions over and over and over again, and he went home.
Exactly. But he would have talked about the Ogopogo because he had that series called In Search Of. Do you remember In Search Of?
Yes.
Which was amazing, and they looked for the Ogopogo. Now, you were mentioning Leonard Nimoy did the 60 interviews in one day. What's the most interviews you did in one day? Because I heard you did 55 interviews in one day.
Oh, that was
Leonard
different.
Did 60. But what was 55 in a day? It's amazing.
What it was we were late in even thinking about covering the Grammys in Los Angeles. So at the last minute, they said, okay, Mulligan, get on a plane. We're going to send your camera down. And you're going to have to talk your way in because there's no media pass for you. We got beside the auditorium, and there was a high cage fence. And we said to the guy through the fence, we're Olivia Newton-John's camera crew. And the guy laughed like crazy. He said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Come on in. And we went in, and we just set up where they let all of the talent out of their cars. And then later, after the show was done, where they all stood waiting for their limos to show up, and we picked off 55 interviews in one afternoon evening.
Now, how long did that last? Because the Nardwuar, the Human Serviette radio show, is every week. I mean, if I do it, 52 weeks, you had more than a year. How long did you spread it out for?
Well, it was 3 in the afternoon till about midnight.
But, I mean, when it was eventually aired, have an infinite amount to draw from, or did it all get edited down?
No, everything was used. All the interviews were 1 or 2 minutes long. And the best one of all, Tony Wanamaker, the cameraman, I heard him say, nice boots, Mr. Autry. And Gene Autry walked by with the most gorgeous cowboy boots you've ever seen in your life. And this is the first and last time I ever saw Gene Autry.
Was he wearing a nudie suit as well? Those nudie suits.
I have no idea. So I can't remember. So it's just fog.
So you've talked to Little Richard and Gene Autry. Do you go any farther back than that? Did you ever talk did you ever talk to Sam Phillips?
I talked to Sam Phillips, actually, at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. When they reconstructed his studio at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I said to him at the press conference, and actually it's online, I said, here's the thing. You can put all that stuff down there. You can put the amps and the lights and the walls and everything and the microphones, but you can't recreate what happened between you and Elvis through the window what happened? He said, you're absolutely right. I told them that it wasn't the room. It was what happened in the room and the spark between Elvis and I. That's what you can't capture. It's the only thing, the only way you're ever going to capture that is listen to the music.
Did he look good? Because the Cramps said he looks like a vampire. He looks the same.
No, he looked great. He was very nice.
And you are Terry David?
Mulligan. And you are?
Nardwuar the Human Serviette on Roundhouse Radio on your show and kind of hopefully on CITR, my show.
How many times a day do you answer the question, how's your health?
Not enough, actually. It's great. Like, I love that people ask about it, because if they don't ask me, then I think and I get scared. So I really appreciate all the feedback and people asking. And I will give you a little update. I did go to a doctor over the summer, and he said, see you in a year. Oh. So that made me feel a Very lot good. Better.
All right. That was a year ago that your ticker sort of...
December the 5th, 2015. Yes, I've been in there a long time. And thank you for keeping the Oh God, My Mom's on Channel 10 from 1989. That is the first Nardwuar release from 89. And thank you also for this gift, Learn Disco Dancing.
Have you been able to follow Art Bergman and his releases and the music that he's making these days?
I have indeed. In fact, believe it or not, Art Bergman was the very first interview that I ever did on September the 26th, 1985. And people can go to YouTube and check that out. They can see me in action and Art. And actually, I want to speak to Art because he thanked my high school in the liner notes to his record. So when I finally asked him, you thanked my high school. He said, we thanked everybody else.
I'm going to ask you a serious question here. You've been watching the rock and roll scene and reporting on it and talking about it for a long, long time. Where are we today with the music community in Vancouver? I mean, there's a lot of bands, a lot of artists not getting a lot of play. Is this a golden period? What's going on?
Well, I will refer back to me in high school. I used to do PA announcements to a classroom, and I was happy that the classroom heard it. Now bands have the opportunity for the world to hear what they do. And they might say to me, oh, we only got like 400 likes, and you know, we could have got like a million. Like, it's like 400 more people than used to hear the announcements or hear your music. So I think it is a great time. I do remember at Lollapalooza, you looking at me and saying, those are your people. Those are your people. But they aren't really my people, TDM. What did you mean by that? Because what I am saying is there are probably people out there in garages in North Van, etc., playing that I don't know about. I only know a fraction of people. I'm still learning doing it. Like, for instance, when I walk into CITR Radio, I look at new DJs and I think, oh, I know everything. But then I see them, like, broadcasting their heartbeat. Yes, their heartbeat. And I'm like, oh, I guess I don't know everything. So things are constantly getting invented. But now it's the best time. In fact, I heard record exec Lior Cohen say, now is the best time ever to start a record label.
Because?
I think because you don't have to make CDs. You just have to push a button and the record is out there. And the record label, a lot of the times, gets a 360 deal. So they get a cut of the T-shirts, of the concert revenue.
So let me ask you this, the Evaporators. Where can you, besides live gigs that you're doing, will your sales mostly come from online?
Right now, people can hear the record completely on SoundCloud or on Bandcamp.
So there goes the sales.
Or at mitrecords.com. However, they can, or on iTunes, they can buy it on iTunes. However, they can also buy the vinyl version starting January 1st at selected record stores around Vancouver. And the Evaporators will do our return gig on April the 15th, 2017, Record Store Day. That will be return.
Will you go to Neptune?
Yes, that will be at Neptune Records.
Which is where you shot your fantastic video, Mohawks and Dreadlocks.
Exactly.
And you also used the same car in... hold on a second.
I Can't Be Shaved video.
No, no.
Well, going, yeah, it's amazing. The dune
buggy.
Use
the same dune buggy in I Can't Be Shaved.
Exactly. And welcome to my castle. Going all the way back to like 92. Yes, we've had the same dune buggy over and over again in all the shows. And I think even for my Much Music specials, I use that dune buggy. It was originally owned by, he bought it, Scott, our drummer, and then he sold it to John, our bass player, so it stayed in the family. It's amazing that he knows that. And also, a vintage 1966 Westphalia camper is in the video, too.
Speaking of vintage, Nardwar, the human serviette, who can be heard on CITR 101.9. FM, UBC Radio.
And you are Terry David Mulligan.
I am. This is Roundhouse Radio 98.3 Vancouver. Now, the Drake interview, how did that come about?
Well, believe it or not, I talked to him in 2010, and the way I talked to him in 2010 is a guy gave me, Peter Rosenberg, his phone number, and I just phoned him up. And then 6 years later, he contacted me. Drake contacted me, and then I did the interview. So it was 6 years between interviews, but it all started because I went to the South by Southwest music conference, and I met this guy, Peter Rosenberg, who had Drake's cell phone number. So when Drake came to town, I phoned up Peter. Peter gave me a number, and that's the rest of the story.
What was your best question?
I think he was really floored by DJ Screwed. Like, for instance, I really love this reaction of Drake. For instance, he talked about DJ Screw, how he had DJ Screw was like a legendary Houston rapper that like slowed music down. And he also had a tape store, DJ Screw's Records and Tapes. And Drake created the complete store as his onstage prop. Like, you know, like Neil Young, it's not like giant Marshall amps. Drake had the complete store on stage as his prop. That was amazing. I did not know.
That's dough well spent.
How many boots are you on? Like, for instance, like people might, have you come across your voice? Oh, that's my voice. Like, you were on quite a few bootlegs introducing people.
Oh, actually, you know
you
what?
You know what?
Yes,
I mean, records.
True.
Like, uncredited Terry David Mulligan.
The Doors, live in Vancouver.
1970?
Whatever.
Oh, in what capacity? Yeah, screaming or actually introducing?
No, I'm introducing. Yeah, that's when John Tanner and I went up at the end of the show and said, "Hey, let's get another tune. What do you say?" And their manager went out of there because their boys were in the car and they were leaving. And the manager was furious. He said, "That's going to cost you $10,000." And he got the guys out to come up. He got out of the car and got them back on stage to do one more song. It was a bad move from John and I.
Buddy, be cool. We welcome The Doors.
So people can check out The Doors and hear Terry David Mulligan in action.
And the other one is the concert for Enchitka, the start of Greenpeace. That concert with Joni Mitchell, Bill Henderson from and Chilliwack were there, James Taylor, Phil Oakes, and I was the MC for that, and that was the first time ever anybody ever used the term Greenpeace, and it raised money.
Were the first person to use the term?
No, it was the organizers, but that's the first night, the first time I ever heard it come out of a speaker system, and that money went to buy the fish boat that they took up to Enchitka to stop the nuclear testing.
What year was that?
I don't know. 71?
In 1970, you also did the Vancouver Pop Festival. Was that dangerous, the Vancouver Pop Festival? Like, there were a lot of...
I don't remember danger. I remember people throwing things, but that's about it.
In what respect? Like, why were people throwing stuff? Like, Vancouver Pop...
Because it was stupid and stone?
Who was there? What do you remember about that, aside from the throwing?
I don't remember. I try to forget it.
But that is not immortalized on boots.
Do we know any of the bands?
What was your relationship with the Guess Who? Because around 1970, 71, they were hitting. They were hitting big. Because at first they did the Guess Who Blues, which were... What did you react to? Like, them dissing you? You're good friends. Did you laugh?
I couldn't care less. And we remained friends over the years. It was... I spent my time in Regina.
And the Checker Lads. Do you remember the Checker Lads? That we covered the Evaporators.
Yes.
The Checker Lads, Baby Send For Me, a 1960s garage nugget. What do you remember? You don't remember?
I can barely remember.
you want true loving, baby, send for me. A little kissing and a hugging, baby, send for me. You can find my number in the telephone book. All you gotta do is look, baby, send for me. If you ever have problems, baby, send for me. And you want me to solve them, baby, send for me. You can find my number in the telephone book. All you gotta do is look, baby, send for me. Wow, now, morning and noon and night, in the early bright. Don't you fret, my pretty pet, I'm gonna treat you right.
Do you remember anything about the local bands?
No. I can't remember anything about the local band. There were, I mean, I remember the Guess Who being the one band that came in and just rocked my socks. I just loved it. And here's the thing, Nard. I had, one of the gigs that I had was to MC at the Fourth Dimension Coffee House in Regina.
The Zombies.
Okay, but no, that was Calgary. But the deal is, the Fourth Dimension Coffee House was a circuit. Then you could play
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah, you could play three or four or five different cities, Fourth Dimension Coffee House, which means they could book bigger acts. Well, they got Chuck and Joni Mitchell. But the very first time the Guess Who ever had Burton on stage with them was at the Fourth Dimension Coffee House in Regina, and I taped the whole show. And I held that tape, never listened to it. I held on to it for years and years and years. And then one day, my kids and my wife sold that box of tapes to somebody at a garage sale at our house. Included in there was every press conference that the Beatles did on that first tour. I was the guy that recorded it at the station, and I held onto the master tapes. And they all went to somebody.
Have they turned up on bootlegs?
I have no idea.
Oh, no.
I know.
And you are Terry David Mulligan.
Do you have another question? You've got to go up big now.
Well, I was curious. After me, you were having Red Robinson. He hired you.
Yeah.
Red Robinson hired you.
He did.
John Lennon famously told Red Robinson to fuck off.
Yep.
Have you been told fuck off by anybody? Like, if any artist told you to fuck
yes.
off? Like, for instance, I remember Jay Myers, who worked for Much Music.
Love Jay.
He flew all the way, I think, to Iceland to interview the guys, I think, from Blur. And I think the guys from Blur weren't into it. And Jay said, you weren't into it? Well, I guess so. Okay, well, goodbye. And then it was like 2 minutes, and then they left, and then they flew home. Did you have that experience? Did anybody tell you to F off?
Yes, the Stein Valley outside of Vancouver, trying to save the last unlogged wilderness in the area. And it was everybody was there. It was fantastic. It was a wonderful event. And one of the headliners was Ian Tyson. And I walked up to him on the side of the stage and said, could I ask you a couple of questions? And he said, why the hell would I want to talk to you?
Well, how did people remember you? Did people remember you? Like, I know that Tommy Chong has told many stories, like Michael Jackson's dad did not remember me. He didn't remember me. Or Michael Jackson didn't remember me. Or Ted Nugent didn't remember me. Like, how did people remember you? Did people not remember you? Like, did you interview a person several times and they still didn't know who you were?
They do. It's like you. People see you on the street. Or they see you in a store. And they'll look at you and they'll go, they'll try to figure out where do I know that? And sometimes they'll say to me, you're Fred Latremont. No, I'm not. You're Norm Groman. No, I'm not. No, no.
Did you ever try to convince anybody that you interviewed him? I remember seeing Slayer at the airport and running up to them and go, I talked to you 15 years ago. And they were like, yeah. You know, like they didn't remember it. Did you ever try to convince anybody that you interviewed him?
No, I don't have that. I don't have that thing in me. That I don't have that chemistry in my body.
Like your family didn't say, oh, that's cool. You talked to Slayer. Can we meet them?
And then this is the only time I ever talk about this stuff. This is the only time I ever talk about it is when you're in the room with me. Other than that, it's just I have it's all just fading. And I'm pretty good.
How old are you now, Terry?
I will be 75 June the 30th.
How long have you been doing it? Because I know you were a Mountie.
I was a Mountie.
How long have you been doing it?
I was a Mountie from 19 to 20, 21, 22, 23. And then I've been doing radio ever since. And I started radio in just end of 64, early 65 in Red Deer.
Did you ever run into Peter Mansbridge? Because he was around the same time.
He
began as the announcer at the airport.
No, I gave him an award at the Geminis or the Genies or whatever they were called back then. And I handed him the award and I stepped back so he could make his acceptance speech. And he said, wow, I just met Terry David Mulligan. I have no idea that what I was doing in the West Coast would even be seen in Toronto. So for me to see, this was in Ottawa or Toronto or something. So it was quite remarkable, and that's the only time I ever saw Peter.
Back to Terry David Mulligan.
I'm going to wrap this up in a second. We're going to go up big boffo stuff, okay?
Okay, go ahead.
See, you can't nod on radio. It's not going to work. You have one more question? Anything?
No, go ahead. Okay. I will hit you with another one.
Thank you. Well, no, I'm going to wrap it up. You have to give me your last question.
Okay, well, the last question is you and Nirvana. You never talked to Nirvana until the funeral. Could you explain?
Well, I never.
The funeral.
The funeral. No, you and I were at the same gig. The Peony Agridome? Was it the Agridome?
Yes.
You're nodding again on radio.
Yeah, the Peony Forum.
Like Forum.
Which actually has a lot of history. What do you remember seeing there?
Well, I can't.
The Rolling Stones.
Whatever. But
Slipknot.
Whatever. But no, actually, I saw. Not Slipknot.
They did play there.
Did they?
Yeah.
Okay. I do remember Fleetwood Mac, the original Fleetwood Mac at the Agridome. I love not the Agridome. What was the little one? Is it the Forum? Was the long and narrow one?
The Forum was about 5,000 people.
No, but
the Agridome smelled.
What was the long and narrow one?
I think that was a Forum.
Where we saw Roxy Roller and Brian Adams that
I
first
don't
time?
Go that far back.
Okay, fine. Here's
how dare you mention his name? I was afraid that he would come up. We won't say anymore.
Okay, fine. And basically, Nirvana was playing, and probably you, at your instigation, saying you should be there. You got to be there. You got to be. No, it was my daughter. And you got the interview because you had done your homework and they knew you and you had talked your way in. And I just took the rejection and went home. I didn't get my interview.
Well, I waited for 2 days and got the interview.
Yeah.
But you did the same sort of thing in L.A. at the Grammys. You kind of like hang out beside the venue and then you got in. I did the exact same Terry David Mulligan technique, which I learned from Grant Lawrence of the band The Smugglers, Belfry Avenue in West
Van.
He's
an icon now.
And they are reuniting. The Smugglers are reuniting in January for a gig. And I learned, arrive early at the gig, really early at the gig, and you will get everything you want.
So there's a new Evaporators album out there called Ogopogo Punk. It's out there now.
Featuring Nick Thomas, who is the brother of Jackie Thomas, who did TDM, Terry David Mulligan's book, Mulligan's Doom.
Let's do it together.
Do 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 do.
Okay, now we're going to do the hustle. A 6-count basic. Start by putting our feet together, flexing the knees for good balance. The man's part first. Place the weight on your right foot. Tap your left foot to the side about 6 inches. Bring your left foot to your right foot together. Tap to the right about 6 inches. Bring your feet together and take 2 additional steps in place, starting with your left foot. Left, right. Let's repeat. Side, together, left, right. Okay, let's try that one more time. Here we go. And side, together, 1, 2. Now let's try to count up to 6 with the timing and the music. Here we go. Ready? And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, two, three, four, five, six. Remember, the 4-5-6 is in place. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Now let's do the girls' part. Girls, up, feet together, starting with the right foot. Step to the side about 6 inches with the right foot. Here we go. Side together. Now with the left foot, side together. Two steps in place, starting with the right foot, right, left. Here we go again. And side together, right, left. Okay, fellas, up, facing the girls. Here we go. Ready? And 1-2-3-4-5-6. On the 4-5-6, move your hips like a merengue. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6 is in place. 4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Now we're going to try the progressive step. And on the 4-5-6, refer to your instruction booklet. All variations take place on the 4-5-6. On the 4-5-6, starting with your left foot, the girls will take 3 steps back. Let's first do the basic step. And 1-2-3. Now at this point, with your left foot to the side, starting 3 steps back with the left foot, go. 1-2-3. Step to the right. 1-2-3. Now 3 steps forward, starting with the left foot. 1-2-3. Here we go. From the top. Ready? And 1-2-3. Back, back, back. 1-2-3. Forward, forward, forward. Again. 4-5-6. And 4-5-6. And hold it right here. Now here's the routine. A basic step, a progressive step, and back to a basic step. And 1-2-3-4-5. Progressive step. Go. 4-5-6. 1-2. Forward. 4. Back to a basic step. Very good. Now let's have the guys up. Just the guys. Here we go, fellas. A basic step starting with your left foot. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Now on the 4-5-6, we take 3 steps forward starting with the right foot. Here we go. Ready? And 1-2-3. Forward, forward, forward. 1-2-3. And back, back, back. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Count. 2-3. Everybody count to 6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4. Basic step. 1-2-3-4. Progressive step. 1-2-3-4-5-6. And back to the basic step. 5-6. 1-2-3-4-5. You got it. Girls and guys together. Okay, this time holding hands. Here we go. Ready? Basic step. 5-6-7. Do it. 1-2-3-4-5. Progressive step. 2. Go. 4-5-6. 1-2-3-4. Back to the basic step. 4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. Basic step. Progressive step. Go. 4-5-6. Come on back. Basic step. You got it. Now move your hips a little bit on the 4-5-6. Bend your knees up and down. 4-5-6. Down on 4. 4. Up on 5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6. 1-2-3-4-5-6.
And you are still listening to the Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show. And you
all
just
right, now
heard
we're going to do the war.
Right there.
Stop by putting your feet.
A record given to me by Terry David Mulligan. Learn Disco Dancing. Yes, you heard me fade it out awkwardly. And before that, an interview with Terry David Mulligan that was done at Roundhouse Radio. But I figured, hey, it would be good for CITR. So the engineer sent me a copy, an edited copy, and you heard it right there, an interview with Terry David Mulligan. Again, thank you very much, Terry David Mulligan, for the interview, for interviewing me, and also for this record, Learn Disco Dancing. And we heard American Hustle, Partners Face Each Other. To end the Nardwar, the Human Serviette Radio Show, we are going to hear Thank You Martin from the Plimptons for sending your band Gums from Scotland with It's Christmas, I'm Sorry. And we are going to follow it up by the $6 million man doing Christmas stories. Now, the amazing thing about this record is it is not really the $6 million man, Lee Majors. It is somebody impersonating the $6 million man. So you will hear the $6 million man playing and impersonating Lee Majors doing some Christmas adventures. We are going to hear as much as will allow the Toy Maker, Elves Revolt, the Kris Kringle Caper, and Christmas Lights. Again, from the $6 million man Christmas LP. And right now, here is thank you again, Martin, for this release. I really appreciate you sending this over. And we are going to hear right now something from the band Gums. And what we are going to hear is we are going to hear It's Christmas, I'm Sorry. So here is Gums and then the $6 million man on the Nardwuar the Human Serviette radio show.
Does the snow that falls on Leith also fall in Pollock Shields on the days and through the years? And do the lights that blink downstairs also blink and find me there in the bathroom of an office night out, holding back your hair? I live for the moments that I don't know that you're not here and it's not years ago. It's Christmas.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it? Oh,
it's not. Let's go back home. This morning I thought I was back in your kitchen. I felt every detail there. Nothing was missing. Wrapping paper tore in my hands with every last dagger you threw from your glance. Distant bells, the cats meow, the sound of a Christmas tree come crashing down. Upstairs neighbor still kicking the door. How could I forget, dear, you lived on the top floor? It's too late to say that I'm still here and I might not be this time next year. It's Christmas.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it? Oh,
it's not.
Still be here right where we left
it. It's Christmas.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
It's Christmas.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Can it still be here right where we left it?
I'm sorry.
Christmas is a time of universal joy. All men, no matter what field of endeavor they pursue, feel the spirit of the Yule season. That is, all men except Fritz Koenig.
I'm sorry, Fritz, but I can no longer use you. We've become automated.
But, Mr. Denzer, I'm a master craftsman. You have said that I am the best toy maker in the world. Why, no one can turn out the quality of work that I do.
That's true, Fritz, but you take too long. I need quantity, not quality. I have inventories to fill, profit margins to maintain. This is a business, Fritz.
But my new invention's a duplicator. You said it would help things along.
I'm sorry, Fritz, but our tests were conclusive. The duplicator cannot produce a high-quality duplicate toy.
You said you were not interested in quality.
Well, what I meant was...
Give me my machine.
It's worthless, I tell you.
Then give it back.
No.
Return my invention or I'll kill you.
Get away from me, old man. Jerry, get in here. I have something for you to get rid of.
At the headquarters of the Office of Scientific Intelligence, Chief Oscar Goldman is in a meeting with Colonel Steve Austin.
Steve, I've got a strange one here. I'm not sure what to make of it.
Tell me about it, Oscar.
The local police found a badly beaten elderly man in an alleyway early this morning. He was barely alive when they brought him into the hospital.
How is he now?
It looks like he's going to make it.
Since when are we interested in characters found sleeping in the street?
This particular character was Dr. Fritz Koenig.
I don't recognize the name.
Not too many people know of him. He immigrated to the United States before the Second World War. He was a specialist in molecular structure.
What was he doing in the alley?
We don't know, Steve.
Is he out of work? Did he suffer from exposure? It gets rather cold this time of the year.
All the indicators point to foul play, Steve. My sources inform me that Koenig has been working as a toy designer for the Dancer Manufacturing Company for the past 10 years.
A toy designer?
Yes. Officially, he had dropped out of sight, but we felt he was important enough to keep tabs on.
What do you want me to do, Oscar?
I've got a feeling that Dr. Koenig is back doing his old work in molecular structure, and someone is trying to steal it from him. From now on, he's going to be covered 24 hours.
By me?
Not just yet. First...
I know, the first stop is a Dancer Manufacturing Company.
Be careful, Steve.
Later that evening at the Dancer Manufacturing Company, Colonel Steve Austin quietly slips in through an open vent.
My childhood dream come true. Free reign of a toy factory. Someone's coming. I'd better find a place to hide. There, behind those boxes.
I can assure you, Mr. Vasilich, this is a genuine article.
We are prepared to pay whatever amount is necessary to take possession of the machine, if and only if it performs to specifications.
That is the purpose of this test, to prove the capabilities of the molecular duplicator.
The power of such a unit is very great indeed. We could revolutionize the tactics of war.
Here we are, sir. Jerry, prepare the machine for use. You'll notice that a portable power source has been adapted to the duplicator so it can operate on any terrain.
Very impressive.
Now, watch over there. That toy army tank. Set the duplicator on 5, and... See? In a matter of seconds, a perfect duplicate of the original toy tank.
Amazing. But will it work with full-sized weapons?
Why, I don't know.
But I must know. I have been trusted with a great sum of money. I must not be swindled. I need to see an actual tank reproduced.
Then it will be arranged immediately.
What is that?
Attack dogs. I came from here to frighten away intruders. I think we have one on the premises right now. Jerry, release the dogs.
That's my cue to exit. I hope I can outrun those dogs. Gotta find a way out of here.
There he is. Stop him.
There's the fence. I have to jump the fence. One, two, here goes. Made it. Now to report.
Early the following morning, Steve Austin meets Oscar at the City General Hospital.
How is Dr. Koenig?
Getting stronger, Steve. How did you make out last night?
I'll tell you when we see Koenig. I think there are a few things he can explain. I tell you this much, Oscar. He hasn't been idle in the last couple of years.
Something big?
Tops, Oscar. And a man by the name of Vasilich seems very interested in paying whatever it takes to own it.
Alexei Vasilich?
I have never seen him before.
Tall, heavy set, wears flashy clothing?
That's him. Who is he?
He's a weapons broker, the most powerful underground espionage agent in the Western Hemisphere. I've been trying to get my hands on him for years.
You may get your chance.
I hope so. Let's see what Dr. Koenig has to say. Dr. Koenig, this is Colonel Austin. There's something he would like to discuss with you.
It has to do with a molecular duplicator.
How did you know about that?
I saw it work last night. A man named Dancer.
That thief! Charlatan! He knew my invention worked all along. He was trying to cheat me.
What is this all about?
I retired from physics 10 years ago. I could no longer get myself involved in theories and equations. So I used a talent I had developed as a child, designing models and toys. I went to work for Mr. Dancer. He said I was good, but I couldn't turn out the quantity he needed to show a profit. So I invented the duplicator to reproduce my toys in quantity. I thought with the Christmas season upon us, he would be happy with the idea. But no, that scoundrel, he robbed me.
And now he plans to sell it to the highest bidder.
We have to stop him. What's his next move?
Vasilich didn't want to buy the machine on the basis of the demonstration with a miniature tank last night. Somehow Dancer is going to have to get his hands on the real thing and prove that the duplicator can work on a major scale.
That fool! That is impossible! It can only work with toys! I designed it for small objects!
Can you be sure that it will not work on a full-sized armored tank?
Well, no. I can't guarantee anything.
Steve, I think we'd better get moving. Where would Dancer get a tank?
I've been thinking about that, Oscar. The logical thing for him to do is to bring Vasilich to the tank.
But he can't get into a military base.
No, but the National Guard Armory has a tank platoon parked out back. I don't even think they have a sentry on duty.
Let's get over there. I'll call for reinforcements.
I don't think that's a good idea, Oscar. We can't afford to scare them off. We need both the duplicator and Vasilich.
What do you suggest?
Let me go in alone. Wait for my signal.
I'll wait, but only until I think you may need me. Deal?
Okay.
That evening at the National Guard Armory...
I'm sorry to inconvenience you this way, Mr. Vasilich, but it was more practical to bring you here.
I don't mind. It gives me a chance to look over your new armored weapons.
Well, then, I believe we are ready for the demonstration. Do you have the money?
$4 million. Will it be sufficient?
I don't know. This is a very expensive machine. Other powers might pay more fantastic sums.
But at the present, I am the only one with the cash, Mr. Dancer. So let us stop playing games and proceed.
Yes, of course. Jerry, set up the molecular duplicator. Now we will see what this machine is truly capable of.
It worked! You have produced another tank!
You see, I told you'd be worth the money. Now, if you're satisfied, I'll take the machine and the money.
Who's there?
Jerry! Get that guy!
Dancer, you will die for setting up this trap.
No, I swear, I didn't know! It's all over, Vasilich. We got a nice, cozy cell waiting for you.
Steve, what happened?
Vasilich shot Dancer and his accomplice, Jerry. He thought it was a trap.
What was that loud explosion?
That was Dancer's dream blowing up in his face.
You mean...
Dr. Koenig was right, Oscar. The machine doesn't work on large objects. The tank was reproduced, but the molecules couldn't stay together. It exploded into dust.
That pile of rubble is all that is left of a tank?
Well, Dr. Koenig, at least, will have his machine back.
I was hoping we were onto something that really worked.
Better luck next Christmas, Oscar. Maybe you should buy one of Koenig's toys.
With only 7 shopping days left until Christmas, Colonel Steve Austin suddenly remembers he has not bought any gifts for his friends and relatives. He decides to go to Geffner's, the large department store downtown.
Can I help you, sir?
Yes, I'm looking for something in perfumes.
Any particular fragrance?
I thought you might be able to suggest something.
Well, there certainly is a large variety to choose from.
I can see that. What's all that commotion about?
That's where the store Santa Claus holds court. Probably some kid didn't get what he wanted and he's registering a complaint.
Sounds more serious than that.
Hey, stop that man! He stole my Christmas present! Hey, you! Stop!
Watch it, mister. This is a crowded store. Someone could get hurt.
Sorry, pal. I'm in a hurry.
I understand. Christmas rush.
Yeah, well, I gotta run.
Hey, mister, give me my Christmas present.
Go away.
Give it to me.
Come on, kid, go away.
What seems to be the problem?
He stole my Christmas present, the one that Santa Claus gave me.
Look, pal, she's my daughter. I wanted to surprise her. Now she's gonna ruin the whole thing.
He's not my father. Give me my present.
I think you better give it to her.
Get out of my way.
Put that gun away. Someone could get hurt.
Not if you leave me alone. Now stand aside. I'm walking out of here.
Well, you're not.
Later, at the Office of Scientific Intelligence, Colonel Steve Austin is in a security conference with his boss, Oscar Goldman.
Good thing you called me in on this, Steve.
When I grabbed that guy, he dropped the package and it broke open. I could see the thing inside was no ordinary Christmas present. That's why I picked it up and got it to you.
Steve, you seem to have a talent for finding trouble. But in this case, you may have stumbled on a major espionage ring.
An espionage ring?
Steve, the man you fought with in the department store is Harrison Fredericks. For a long while, he's been known to be a free agent in the espionage market, selling his services to the highest bidder. But what is even more interesting to us is what he was carrying in that package.
What was it?
It was an electronic fuel cell for our latest attack missile, the SYR-9.
The SYR-9? I thought that was out in California. No one is supposed to know about it.
Someone does, Steve. And I have an idea how we can break this ring.
I'm all ears.
I'm going to need you for this. I don't mean to put you in an awkward position, but I don't have any other way to go about it.
Break it to me gently, Oscar.
Steve, after Fredericks was arrested, we suspected that the man playing Santa Claus at the department store was being used as a go-between for moving the stolen parts.
Did you bring him in?
About 20 minutes ago. He's clean, Steve. He doesn't know a thing. He probably wasn't involved at all. Just gave out the gifts to kids in line.
Which means a dead end.
Not necessarily. If he were to take a few days off and be replaced by another Santa who could keep a trained eye on things, we may get lucky.
Who did you have in mind?
Why, you, of course.
Mr. Maris?
Yes, who are you?
I'm Steve Austin, the new Santa Claus for the toy department.
I can't see why they hired you. No belly, no beard. You need a total makeup job. I don't know whether or not you'll be convincing.
The man in the office upstairs said to report to you.
Yes, I see.
Where do I change?
In the locker room at the back. Yours is number 13. You'll find a red suit and beard in the locker.
Thanks.
This is Maris. We may have some trouble. No, a new Santa Claus. The other guy got sick or something. No, I just think that it's strange that this new guy shows up after that guy, Fredericks, gets arrested. I don't know. He may be an undercover agent. He doesn't look like a professional Santa Claus. Yeah, well, if there are any problems, what should I do? Are you sure? I've never done that before. Yes, sir. Goodbye.
I think I need some more padding around the middle.
Well, let's fix that beard first. Here we go. Not bad. Not bad at all. Now, just go out there and hand out the gifts. Make sure you take them from the pile on the left.
On the left?
Yeah. And don't get it confused, or you may be out of a job.
Hey, don't I know you?
Of course, everyone knows me. I'm Santa Claus.
There's no such person as Santa Claus.
Then who am I?
I think you're the man who was here the other day, the one who tried to get my present back for me.
I'm Santa Claus.
I told you there's no such person.
Then what are you doing on my lap?
I want a present.
But you got one the other day.
No, I didn't. The police took it. I want another one.
Okay, here you go.
No, I want it from that pile.
Those are for later. I can't give you those now.
Santa, that's quite all right. Give the little girl a gift from the pile she wants.
I thought you said...
Just do as I say.
Hello?
Oscar, it's your favorite Santa Claus.
Steve, how are things going?
I think I'm onto something, Oscar. Do you remember that little girl who accused Fredericks of stealing her present yesterday?
Yes, her name was Sandy.
That's right. She came by again today for another gift. The boss of the department, Maris, insisted that I give her a box from a different pile of gifts.
What do you make of it, Steve? Could the child be involved?
I'd hate to think so, but at this point, I think we have to consider every possibility.
Get back to me as soon as you need the troops.
I will. Goodbye, Oscar.
Don't turn around, Mr. Austin. If you make one move, it'll be your last.
I don't understand.
I have a revolver pointed at your back, and I'm an expert shot.
Listen, Mr. Maris, I like a joke as much as the next man.
This is no joke, Mr. Austin. I suspected from the very beginning you might be an undercover agent. Now my suspicions are confirmed. I heard every word of your telephone call.
Then you are the man behind the espionage ring.
No questions, Mr. Austin. Therefore, no answers.
Which means you don't know who the head of the outfit is. I didn't think you had the brain power for the job.
Enough of this. I don't have to listen to anymore.
I'll bet you get from every side. But tell me, where does the girl Sandy fit into this?
She knows nothing. She just serves as a messenger.
That's a great job for a kid of her age.
Quiet! You've spoken your last word. I have no alternative. I must kill you.
Don't be a fool, Maris. Federal agents are surrounding the building right now.
By then, it'll be too late. Goodbye, Mr. Austin.
Steve, are you all right?
Just fine, Oscar. Our man here isn't the top of the line.
Don't worry about that. I had a hunch you might need help, and I had one of our men on the scene. He followed the little girl out of the store, and she led us right to Mr. Big. And we grabbed him, just as she handed him another one of the missing fuel cells, wrapped up in a Christmas package.
And I guess that ties it all up.
Looks that way.
Wait a minute. There's one more thing.
What's that, Steve?
I owe a little girl a Christmas present.